Is God calling you to ministry? It's time to multiply your capacity for ministry with an affordable degree. The Bachelor of Arts in Christian Ministry at Wesley Biblical Seminary is the degree for you. When God called you to ministry, He called you to preparation. This degree is the education that you need to put all the pieces together for an amazing life of ministry. You will graduate with a confidence for ministry that is backed up by your competence in the scriptures, theology, and ministry. Come learn with a trusted seminary that will help you become a faithful leader. Learn more at wbs.edu.
Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
Hey, good morning, everybody, and welcome to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Tim Wildman here with Fred Jackson. Good morning, Fred.
Good morning, Tim.
Chris Woodward.
Hello.
And Ray Pritchard. Good morning, Ray.
Good morning, Tim. How you doing?
Hey, I see by video, although our listeners can't see you, you're donning your Ole Miss shirt here. The Rebels are off to
a good start. And hey, it's college football season right? Whatever team you're for, put on the jersey and let's go tee it up and kick it off.
Let me step away. I'm going to go get my cowbell.
There you go. Hail State.
Ole Miss is ranked number 6.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they are.
Top 10. I mean,
they put a whooping on, what is it, Furman?
Yeah.
Furman?
Yeah. Paladins.
Okay, but there's some things that are wrong. And to be beating Furman 52-0 at halftime was – I thought immoral.
That was a little rough. I mean, it wasn't exactly a close game.
I tell you.
You know what?
It was close for about the first 30
well,
seconds.
Well, opening weekend of college football season, you usually have a lot of smaller schools play the big boys. Yeah. And, you know, people say, "Why?" My brother was texting me. He was saying, "Why do they do this?" And I said, well, what happens is the smaller schools need money.
Right.
Right? They need money for their – whatever athletic budget, because they don't draw, you know, 100,000 fans to a football game at Furman, for example, what they do is they say, we will go play Ole Miss in Oxford or Tennessee in Knoxville or whatever the case may be, if we're a smaller school, and we'll take our tail kicking. And we'll take our check, and we'll go home and be happy about it.
Mm-hmm. In the case of Furman, they picked up $1.5 million.
Is that right?
Yeah, that's not bad.
I'd lose a game for that.
That's what I'm saying.
You and me both. That's right.
That makes the budget for a lot of these smaller schools.
Yes. Several years ago, when Dan Mullen was still the coach of Mississippi State, they were going to play Mississippi Valley State, which is where Jerry Rice played college football. And the NCAA stepped in and for some reason made that game go away. And it was bad news for MVSU, Mississippi Valley State, because they stood to make more than their athletic department budget just for playing MSU
for
in that football game.
For one game.
And the NCAA was like, you can't do that.
So a lot of the smaller schools, they know they're going to get it handed to them, but they'll get it handed to them and then they'll get handed a check and they'll go home.
Yeah,
and be happy. And it also gives the smaller schools an opportunity to upset the big boys on occasion. Remember when Appalachian State?
Mm-hmm. Right, Michigan.
They went into the big house in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and upset the Wolverines. That still is legendary today, right?
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
So anyway. All right, a lot to talk about. Not all of it good.
No.
Obviously, folks, because we have the situation, sadly, that happened in Georgia. Chris, what's the story there?
Well, as of right now, at least two students dead, two teachers dead, so four total in a Georgia high school shooting in the Atlanta Athens area of Georgia. The suspect is a 14-year-old who is being charged as an adult here. Among the casualties was a football coach, an assistant coach, I should say. And one of the players had this to say to media yesterday during the coverage. Clip 3.
It was kind of just like it hit hard because none of us wanted to believe it. Because it's just so hard to think that somebody that you spent so much time with, because this is my second year with coach, but spending so much time, you felt like family, basically.
Okay, so what happened is, and this is a, is this a rural school or?
It's a suburb of Atlanta. It's up just to the northeast of Atlanta.
Okay. Well, so you have this young man, 14 years old, a student, brings a gun to school and kills two teachers, one of them on the football staff, and then two students died as well, right?
Right, yes.
So four dead total, and then you got multiple.
Nine people injured. The good news on that front is that they're all expected to recover.
Okay. Is there any, do we know any more than that in terms of what motive he had? Or?
Yeah, motive is still, you know, the official term from news outlets and authorities is that the investigation continues. But in some of the news reports last night from Associated Press, Fox News, freelance journalist Andy Ngo, a lot of people were reporting that the suspected gunman was actually on the FBI's radar as far back as 2023. And I have a brief news story here from Fox News Radio that we can play about that if you prefer.
Okay, go.
Clip two.
In May 2023, the FBI's National Threat Operations Center received several anonymous tips about online threats to commit a school shooting at an unidentified location at time. The online threats contained photographs of the guns. The suspect denied making the threats online, and no probable cause for arrest or to take any additional action by law enforcement. Now, authorities went to the 13-year-old's home then and spoke to his father, who said that he had hunting guns in the house, but his son never had unsupervised access to those guns.
Okay, so when I first read that, what she's talking about there, my first reaction is, well, why didn't anybody stop him? This 14-year-old, who would have been 13 at the time, if he's making threats about the school, and the FBI is aware of it, okay, that the headline there makes the FBI look bad.
Yes,
am I right? Mm-hmm. That's your initial thought.
Sure.
I was talking to one of our folks out here who works in security, knows some about how the FBI operates. Okay, so you have to have probable cause to arrest somebody in America. So what happened in this situation, the FBI was made aware of this threat, sent the sheriff's department, so they call the sheriff's department of the county there, and they go out and interview the dad at the time, and I don't know if they interviewed the young man, but and he said, well, we have hunting guns here, but the he doesn't have unfettered access to them, talking about his son. But the sheriff's department said, I guess, that they didn't have any reason to. You can't arrest somebody by going and questioning them, right? Mm-hmm. But the unanswered question that maybe will come out is the in-between stage. In other words, if the FBI was, what does made aware of a threat mean? Because if somebody makes a threat and you can prove it's them, then you can arrest them. You can stop them. You can, whatever, you understand what I'm saying? But that's unclear in the article or from that report we just heard exactly how that went down, Fred.
Yeah, and you know, as you say, that's the problem. So they go there a year ago, whatever it was, when the young man was 13 years of age. They're acting on tips. Sheriff's Department goes there. But the Sheriff's Department says they do not have enough in the way of evidence to do any arrests, confiscate the guns, whatever the case may be. So it all comes back to what happened yesterday. Something occurred in this young man's mind, who's now 14, to cause him to go and do what he did yesterday. We do not know that yet. He, according to what I've read this morning, he is talking about his motives to authorities. They arrested
him. Yeah, because he gave up.
Well, yeah,
he's alive.
He was facing the resource officer at the school who basically told him to drop his gun or he wouldn't see tomorrow. And so, but he is discussing with them his reasons why he carried out what he did yesterday. Yeah. We don't know that yet. That will come out in time.
Right.
If you think about it, I mean, and Tim, everything you said is exactly right. On the surface, it makes the FBI, other law enforcement, look bad. But really, what do you expect them to do? He's 13 years old a year ago. Okay, 13.
Right.
Look, if he's 18, if he's 19, he gets treated a completely different way. If he's in his 20s, completely different way, right? But 13 years old, you go, you talk to the father. Yeah, we've got hunting guns here, but he can't get a hold of them. The young man says, convincingly, I suppose, I didn't have anything to do with that. I'm not making any threats against anybody. In that case, what do you expect law enforcement to do? As you correctly pointed out, Tim, they can't just arrest a person without probable cause. And at least based on what we know now, they didn't have probable cause a year ago. It's tragic, but I don't know what else they could have done in April or May of 2023.
Yeah. Quite frankly, and I don't mean to sound negative here or depressing, but I'm surprised these kinds of things don't happen more than they do. And they happen, they make national news when they happen. I'm talking about school shootings and so forth. But we live in a country of 330 million people. There are tens of thousands of schools, or hundreds of that, I don't know, every day that operate. And inside those schools, you have a lot of children and a lot of kids who are disturbed, mm-hmm. come from broken homes, or they've got drug or mental problem. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So surprising that we don't have this more often than we do, even though when we do have it happen, it makes national news and it should still shock us, but in the way that that evil would personify itself this way.
Yeah.
You know, what is sad is that the Biden administration and now presidential candidate Kamala Harris, the first thing they go to is, we got to do something about guns.
Yeah.
As if the guns do this by themselves.
Did they do that again yesterday?
Oh, yes, sir. Yeah. And I think Chris is going to play a clip.
Yeah, it's not. This is Karine Jean-Pierre immediately after she made the push for gun control yesterday. Clip one.
Enough is enough. And I cannot say this
enough,
which is enough is enough.
What does that even mean?
They're tired of talking about this. It's time to pass
legislation. They don't talk about it.
To ban what they call assault weapons.
And I will tell you, Kamala Harris was at an event yesterday.
Yeah.
Was it Pennsylvania? I believe it was.
She did.
I'm going off script. She said, enough is enough. We have to do something about this. We have to do something about, and they always say gun violence, as if other violence doesn't matter. It's always gun violence you have to do.
As if guns get up in the morning and go, you know, I'm going to go out and shoot somebody.
Yes. Yeah.
Enough is enough. I don't. Right? Do you want to translate that for us?
Look, I understand on one level. We are all sickened. We are. It's a tragedy. It's horrible. And you know what, Tim? I agree with everybody else. I am really tired in the sense of being overwhelmed,
right,
by yet one more school shooting. And
right.
And I hope that we on the conservative side never get, quote, used to this.
Right.
Never get so that our feelings, our heart is not broken
right.
by this. But there are families grieving today because of what happened. But no one has shown any evidence that changing the laws is going to somehow prevent 14 years old, Tim. 14 years old. I've got a grandson who just turned 14. It's hard to think about that, but I can't imagine any law that could be passed that could effectively guarantee that a young man deeply disturbed, obviously, and misled by whatever ideology, who knows, that'll come out. I can't imagine any law that would have stopped or even slightly prevented what happened yesterday.
Right. My sinister attitude, maybe that's not the right word. My cynical attitude when I hear people, especially on the left, start blaming guns and Karine Jean-Pierre saying enough is enough. Whatever. Do you have Kamala Harris's?
Not from that. No, sir.
Right. Okay. Anyway, she said the same thing.
Yep.
Okay. Enough is enough. Okay. We all agree, as Ray just said, none of us, conservative, liberal, Republican, or Democrat, we can't stand to hear the news of something like this happening again in our country. So to that extent, we would agree enough is enough. But what these liberals want to do is say enough is enough, therefore we must start having strict gun control laws. because guns get up in the morning, go out and go, you know, I think I'm going to shoot somebody. And we know that it's the individual who is responsible for their actions. And in this case, a 14-year-old, and the guns didn't do it. Well, people might say, well, he had access to guns. Well, so do millions of Americans that don't go out and shoot people every day.
Right.
So it's not the guns that force people to do things. It's the darkness of the heart that causes people to commit acts of violence.
You know, there will be a full investigation of all of this, but I think, you know, addressing what Tim, you're saying, Ray is saying, that we are sickened by these incidents, and I'm afraid we're going to have to get to, just because of a lot of reasons, what's going on in our culture right now, we are going to have to get to more security on buildings so that these people, this incident happened inside the school.
Yeah, but how do you stop that, Fred?
Well,
you got to get metal detectors in front of every school and let every kid go through and check their backpacks. I mean, is that what you're going to do?
We mandate that at airports now.
I'm asking. I'm not saying I necessarily disagree with it, but yeah. I'm asking.
At least they should never be allowed to get into the school with a weapon.
But how do you prevent that if they put that in their backpack?
Well, that's where the screening comes in.
Put a pistol.
Metal detectors.
At every school.
I'm just asking you. I think it is a cheap solution to avoid the kind of incident that happened yesterday.
Okay, well, you could get inside a building. I sound like I'm arguing with you. I'm not.
No, I know
you're not. I'm saying, because you could have a kid get on a bus.
Yes, yes.
You're standing, get on the bus and start firing.
Oh, it can happen in the playground. It can happen at the school football team. I know that.
Yeah.
But at least you would stop incidents inside the school, and we've seen, I think, too many of those inside the school.
Yeah. One of the other ideas thrown out there yesterday in the way of quote-unquote gun control comes from Democrat Representative Ro Khanna, whose district is in California. He went on MSNBC and called for he floated the idea of banning so-called assault weapons for people under the age of 25, saying, let's start looking at common sense.
Were we about to hear him? Or?
No,
okay,
no, I
thank
didn't.
Thank you. Thank
yeah.
you.
Well, and that's why I only did the enough is enough okay. is enough clip.
Let me tell you where the left, these liberals, their argument falls apart. Okay? First of all, it falls apart to me at the obvious, what I've said here, guns don't shoot people, people shoot people.
That's
right?
That's right.
That's number one. But number two is, when you have a police incident, and they shoot a person, and it makes like George. They didn't shoot George. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A teenager gets into a scuffle with a cop, and the cop shoots the teenager. Okay, we've had that happen over the last few years, and it made national news, and it stirs up controversy. Do you ever hear the liberals go, "You know what? We got to stop gun violence with police"? No, they don't say that. They say the cops killed yes. a young man.
Yes.
Unnecessarily. Isn't that what they say?
Yep.
So they say, they don't say the guns do it.
Mm-hmm.
But if you flip it and you have a teenager, you see where I'm going with this?
Yes, sir.
See, if you have a teenager, let's say shoot another teenager in a gang war or whatever, they go, stop the gun violence. They don't say, the individual is responsible for his own actions because they got caught up in gang activity, and that's what led to this.
Mm-hmm.
No, but when it's the cops that do it, not the guns. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So that's when their argument completely falls apart. And listen, if you want to get down to the bottom line of this, the liberals and the left, they don't like guns at all, and they don't want Americans to have them. And so they're going to do everything they can, just like in Europe and other places. And there are many places in the Western world that you can't walk around with. Britain, America, we have a Second Amendment, constitutional right to have guns. And so what the liberals would like to do is get rid of that. Now, they won't say that necessarily out loud, but that's their objective when they want to chip away.
Yep.
And anything they can have happen, anything like this that happens, they use it to exploit that argument
Yes.
And try to persuade more Americans to accept their argument that guns are the problem, mm-hmm. and we need to eradicate them.
Yep.
And so anyway, you're listening to Today's Issues. Next story, Chris.
Well, let's mention this real quick. Benjamin Netanyahu, Israeli Prime Minister, was on Fox and Friends this morning to respond to the repeated calls for a ceasefire between Israel and Hamas. And much like he has said for really months now, Netanyahu said, it is not Israel's fault that we don't have a ceasefire. Terrorists in Hamas are not agreeing to things we've agreed to. More international pressure needs to be put on Hamas terrorists, not so much Israel. Enough with the protest. Quit telling us what to do. These kinds of things that he has said time and time again. It then got to a point during the interview when the reporter on Fox, or the anchor, asked Mr. Netanyahu whether or not he was doing this for political points with the Israeli people there. And here his here is Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's response. Clip four.
I'm not interested in my political future. I'm interested in my country's future. This war would be over yesterday if Hamas laid down its arms, released all the hostages. It'll be over in 2 seconds. But Hamas is refusing to do that. The obstacle to the end of this war is Hamas. The obstacle to the release of hostages is Hamas. The ones who butchered and are slaying, murdering six people in cold blood, riddling them with bullets and then firing bullets into their heads is Hamas. It's not Israel. It's not me. We'll do everything we can to fight these savages. Mm. And it's a savagery that not only endangers Israel, it endangers all democracies. To go and make concessions after these murders, it just it's a license to kill hostages. That's what Hamas will understand. Kill hostages, get concessions.
Yeah, and the point he was making there is that there's pressure on him in the wake of what happened this past weekend when Hamas executed six of the hostages. He said, now to make concessions to Hamas, Hamas would just keep doing this. Mm-hmm. They would keep executing more hostages to get more concessions. He says, you cannot do this. You know, the bottom line in all this, the world has to accept that there is evil in this world. There are evil people. Hamas is evil to its very core. And Netanyahu keeps saying, we cannot allow October 7th to happen again. Therefore, we must take steps to ensure that Hamas doesn't have weapons coming in through tunnels from Egypt. And we are going to protect them, or some international force has to be at that border between Gaza and Egypt. We have to have that, and we must never allow Hamas to have a governing role in Gaza again, period.
You know, the for those who don't know the geography of the situation, most people do, Egypt and Israel border each other.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But the Gaza Strip there is also on the border of Egypt.
Yes.
And so what has happened evidently over the years, Hamas has smuggled weapons through that border, that Egyptian border with Gaza. I'm not saying that the Egyptians haven't tried to prevent that from happening, but who knows, because you may have some Hamas sympathizers among the Egyptian soldiers. So what Israel is saying is that we are going to put our own military on that border. It could still be the Egyptian-Gaza border, but we're going to be a buffer between that, and we're going to check stuff ourselves.
Yes,
that's coming through. And then let it on through.
Yeah, they
have to do that.
Israel has to destroy those tunnels.
Yeah,
that are there. Some of those tunnels, one of those tunnels at least, is big enough for a car to drive through.
Yeah,
have to stop.
They have to cut off completely the weapons of mass destruction and of terror that have been brought in and smuggled into Gaza.
And the weapons come from Iran.
Yes, the weapons that come from Iran. And what Israel does do, they police the waters off in the Mediterranean off the Gaza Strip, but they haven't been able to control that Egyptian-Gaza border.
Yes.
And they're going to have to set up a roadblock, so to speak, in that area. We'll be back momentarily.
If ending babies' lives in their mothers' wombs isn't heartbreaking enough, the Biden-Harris administration punishes those who protect life, including up to 10 years in jail. And in a shocking stance, the Dems' VP nominee, Walz, supports infanticide, meaning the death of newborns. When will this madness end? Preborn's network of clinics is positioned in the highest abortion areas in the country, on standby to protect and love mothers facing unplanned pregnancies. By introducing a woman to her baby through ultrasound and showering her with God's love, her baby's chance at life doubles. But they can't do it without our help. If you're pro-life, please consider a donation of any size to support the mission of Preborn. All gifts are tax deductible and will help to defend the defenseless. One ultrasound is just $28, or five ultrasounds are $140. $5,000 will sponsor ultrasounds for Preborn's entire network for a day. To donate securely, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250, baby. Or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR.
Have no fear of them, nor be troubled, but in your hearts honor Christ the Lord as holy, always being prepared to make a defense to anyone who asks you for a reason for the hope that is in you. Yet do it with gentleness and respect, having a good conscience, so that when you are slandered, those who revile your good behavior in Christ may be put to shame. 1 Peter 3:14-16.
American Family Radio.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Thanks for listening, Tim, with Fred and Chris and Ray. Ray, I wanted you to comment. We got Jenna Ellis coming up in just a minute, but I wanted you to comment on Israel's situation.
Well, I was thinking while listening to Prime Minister Netanyahu, when people tell you who they are, you ought to believe them. And Hamas has told us who they are. Over and over and over again. They told us again last year on October the 7th, they are a bloodthirsty terrorist organization. The story of the six hostages that were killed just recently, the brutality of those executions, what Hamas did in killing those six the way they did, It goes beyond the pale of anything that we think of as connected with, quote, ordinary humanity. No, the leaders of Hamas are evil. There's no way to negotiate with people like that. They've got to be defeated. And in many cases, they're going to have to be killed one by one by one. So as awful as the situation is in the Middle East, I think Mr. Netanyahu is 100% right. Hamas has told us who they are. There'll be no possibility of peace until they are gone.
Yeah, and let me say again, the situation that Israel faces is what because we all see the news and the headlines, especially the news sources that are anti-Israel. They're going to show you the Israeli bombs or whatever into Gaza. And I know a lot of people know this already, but I just want to tell people what this situation is like on the ground there in Israel. So the Hamas organization is based in Gaza, the Gaza Strip, which is inside the country of Israel. Well, that's where only Palestinian people live, only Arabs who are to call themselves Palestinians, live. Well, Hamas rules and operates that whole Gaza Strip. I don't know how many million people there are, a couple million maybe. I'm not sure exactly. But basically, they're the one and only political party, if you want to put that. I'm putting that in quotations, okay? So they rule the whole area like a mob rules a neighborhood, all right? So you don't resist them. You don't. They don't have free and open elections. You do what Hamas says, or you get your knees cut off, so to speak. That's kind of the way it operates. I'm not saying that the average person in Gaza doesn't necessarily agree with Hamas's stance of anti-Israel and they hate the Jews, because that may be true. But when Israel is attacked like they were on October the 7th, you had 1,100 people butchered on that day. And then Israel responds with overwhelming force. It is going to be true that innocent people die. You call that in warfare, what, collateral damage? I don't like that term because it dehumanizes people, but to me. But what I'm saying is Israel cannot, as best they try, they cannot avoid that happening because you're fighting urban warfare. You're fighting inside a densely populated area. You're trying to find out who the enemy are, who the good guys and the bad guys are, while people are walking around with children and trying to buy groceries and eat. So when Israel does launch a military exercise into there, if they go on the ground, it's extremely dangerous for their own people, their own military personnel. But if they don't, if they do, like, you know, smart weapons that bomb buildings, and then remember when this first started and they bombed a building and the Hamas said they bombed a hospital. Remember that? Yes. And the media reported that unquestioned. And then what, 3 days later, we learned it wasn't a hospital. Remember that?
Yep.
So Hamas has their own propaganda machine over there. But so that's what makes it difficult for the Israelis. They're put in a situation where they're having to fight a battle almost with one hand behind their back. But then they're also faced with the survival of their own country. Their own country, the survival of it, because if Hamas is able to get weapons, unfortunately, the Israelis have been able to knock down a lot of the rockets with the Iron Dome.
Yes.
But if the Gaza ever got weapons, they would use them on Tel Aviv and other parts of to kill Jews.
Yep.
Other parts of Israel. So it's I've never heard of a war being started where one side starts the war by killing 1,100 innocent civilians and then immediately the world says, no, Israel, you shouldn't respond. We need a ceasefire.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
When is the people who instigated the war ever been able to dictate the terms of the war after that?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
I've thought a lot about that.
Yeah. And you know what? The scary thing is, within 48 hours of that massacre on October the 7th, there were young people in this country on the streets supporting Hamas.
Right.
Thousands. Well,
they would tell you that those are the people who just hate the Jews and say they're an illegitimate country, they're colonizers. They don't have a right to exist.
Yeah.
Those are those folks. Anything you want to add to that, Ray, before we move on?
It's just a simple fact that there's no middle ground. It's not like you're talking about people with two, I like this color and you like that color. No, these are diametrically opposed worldviews, and the Hamas worldview is that Israel must not only be defeated, but the Jews must be wiped
off. From the river to the sea.
From the river to the sea. And so, Tim, you don't negotiate with people like that.
Right, right.
Yeah. You know, Israel released some video of where these six dead hostages were found. They were down inside a tunnel, but the entrance to the tunnel was what looks like through a child's bedroom. There were pictures like of Mickey Mouse on the wall.
Really?
On the walls.
Yeah.
This is the kind of people we're talking about. They were keeping hostages underneath the floor of a child's bedroom.
Right.
In order to get to those tunnels, Israel has to go in through children's bedrooms.
Let me tell you an anecdotical, is that a word?
It is now.
Yes.
Story, real quick, and then we'll move on to our next topic, and Jen Ellis will be joining us momentarily. The hatred for the Jews among many of the Arabs, not all. There are a lot of good Arabs, and I associate with them and work with them in my trips to Israel. The Arabs and the Jews in Israel, not excluding Hamas, a lot of them get along very well. Okay, they get along very well. But let me just say this: in many of the, let's say, the Arab countries, the hatred for the Jews has been taught to children since they were very small. It's I remember this is what 35 years ago, whenever it was, out my wife and I, we were in, attending college. When was that? In the 80s. Anyway, and she worked at a daycare center. Well, the daycare center had international students, children, okay, from all over the world. And one day they were sitting at the children's table, and they were had colors out, and they were just drawing pictures. And this two Arab children, I shouldn't say, I don't mean to, I'm not indicting all Arabs, okay, don't misunderstand me. They were Muslim. And I'm indicting all Muslims. I'm just telling you, in a lot of places, this is how this is why the hatred runs so deep. You had these two little kids, and they were drawing the Star of David, and they were pointing rockets and weapons at them. These are 5 and 6 year, four and 5 and 6 year olds.
Yeah.
And I remember Allison came home and said, "What was that all about?" Because she didn't understand the politics of that. And I said, "Well, what they're doing, they're being taught at home." Evidently, to hate the Jews and hate Israel.
That's right.
And so, if you're raised in that, I mean, they got comic shows for children over there. We've seen those, and then you got textbooks for children. We've seen those, and they're all teaching that the Jews are the Zionists, and you're to resist and hate the. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. If you're raised in that ideology from the time you're a small child, you can see where that would warp you.
Yes.
Anyway, you're listening to Today's Issues on American Family Radio. Jenna Ellis joins us, host of Jenna Ellis in the Morning, heard each weekday on American Family Radio from 7 to 8 o'clock Central Time. Good morning, Jenna.
Good morning. And I'm going to quote Maxine Waters off the top and say I'm reclaiming my time.
Oh, okay. Is that what she says?
Yes. Yeah, reclaiming my time. Yeah.
All right.
Congressional meeting. So okay. Not to ever quote Democrats favorably, but, you know, you gave me no option.
Yeah, right. Reclaiming your time. That sounds like a book by somebody. Okay, so, Jenna, changing topics here, I wanted to ask you, because I hear a lot of people on the conservative side, and I've said it myself, use the term communist or Marxist to describe the political ideology of people like Kamala Harris and Tim Walz, the governor of the vice president now, well, de facto president, Harris is, and Governor Walz, the VP candidate. And I guess some people say, well, you just throw those terms around and to try to make them look bad. What evidence do you have that Harris and Walz actually believe in communism, for example? Are we using that word to just try to scare people, or is there evidence that they subscribe to Marxism?
Well, I think that Fred said it best, that when people tell you who they are, you should believe them. And in this instance, when Kamala Harris, who has been part of the Biden administration, has shown us who she is, not just telling us with these frivolous campaign promises, like somehow being, you know, the border czar, now she's all for making sure to close the border, and she's literally campaigning off that. I don't believe what she says. I believe what she has done. And so when we use the term communism and we use the term Marxism and paganism, these aren't just pejoratives. These aren't just insults. They have substantive meaning that people need to understand that this is a philosophy of government and how the government is or is not legitimate in terms of protecting the rights that are pre-political, that come from God our Creator. And our Declaration of Independence and our Constitution provide that worldview that the government can't just merely tell us what our rights are as if they're privileges and then just reinvent them at will. And so when Kamala Harris is for open borders and having a ton of illegals come in, that is negating the institution of nations that God has ordained sovereignty. When she wants to do things like a Biden student loan forgiveness bill, which is to redistribute debt, when she's for raising grocery prices and inflation and then taxing everyone to redistribute wealth. Those are things that are communist principles. And Marxism is specifically the ideology that says that there are oppressors and there are the oppressed, and we need to make everyone equal so that no one in society is necessarily, quote unquote, better off than others. And so when they're trying to redistribute wealth, that is a communist principle. And I did actually an entire episode on Marxism and communism with Daryl Harrison, who used to be a pastor with John MacArthur's church. He's now out in Arizona. And we did an entire hour on the definition of Marxism, what you need to know as a Christian, and why this isn't just an insult, it's an accurate description of Kamala Harris's policy. So people can find that episode from last Friday at AFR.net. Click on the icon for Jenna Ellis in the morning.
Jenna, I think it's interesting to talk about symptoms which would lead one to believe that there is some Marxist ideology on the left in this country. When they say there are threats to democracy, question that. When they talk about we want to protect the citizens against misinformation, would you agree that what they're really talking about is censorship? They're going to censor what information we are exposed to.
Absolutely. And this is what Brazil is doing. This is what the United Kingdom is doing. And just this morning, I had a professor of internet law from...
Hey, Jenna.
Yes.
We can't. It's too distracting.
Hello? Can you hear me?
No, it's the dogs.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, somebody knocked on my door.
Okay.
And, sorry
well,
about
I mean,
that.
I love the dogs, but we can't.
I know.
We can't.
Oh, you can hear me. I apologize.
We can hear you, but okay. It's like y'all are dueling.
Oh, I apologize for that. Yeah, we were totally quiet, and then I think it's the Amazon guy. I apologize for that.
Okay.
Come here.
Okay.
But hopefully, let me try to just shut my door here, and see if that works. So when we're talking, about things like censorship for places like Brazil, the United Kingdom, I actually had a professor of internet law on my radio program off the top this morning that was talking about this and saying that that what the Biden administration has done through the Twitter files and even here in the United States, what Kamala Harris wants to do is basically use the government to circumvent the First Amendment and to tell these organizations and the social media platforms what is or is not misinformation, what is the preferred narrative, and that is censorship, and that is a form of communist propaganda, and that is the taking away the basic God-given right to freedom of speech, freedom of thought, freedom of belief that that we as Americans hold dear.
All right, that's Jenna Ellis. Jenna joining us from Florida. Sunshine State.
And Todd and Copper, apparently, yeah. And I apologize.
Yeah, that's all right. Okay, Jenna, take care. Thank you.
Thank you.
Take care, Jen.
All right, bye-bye. Anything you want to say to that, Ray?
The dogs sounded very healthy to me.
Yes, they did, didn't they?
You know, it's good. The Amazon guy is coming. He's getting a warning. You know? Drop your stuff off at the door and leave.
You know, it's funny with dogs because it doesn't matter their size. They're still gonna act like they're big and tough. Doesn't matter. Huh?
That's right.
Now, you know, at whoever comes to the door, right?
They've got their own Instagram account, and if you look and I subscribe to it, so if you look at
two dudes, isn't it?
Yeah, something. Two dudes, and they're small. There's Todd and Copper, right. And they're not big, but they've got a bark that makes you think you're dealing with a really big dog.
Mm-hmm. Isn't it T O O D? What is it, Instagram? Do you know what the... I should ask Jenna. Anyway, a lot of followers of the two dudes, D-O-O-D-S.
D-O-O-D-S, right.
Yeah, anyway, my little Maltese, like 11 pounds, and he barks in the night, he sees animals out in our backyard that we don't see, squirrels and so forth, and he we have a gate there, so he only goes so far, but he like guarding the yard from any kind of varmints, like he could do something about it if we open. It's kind of like if we open the gate and let him go after them.
Yeah.
I don't think he wants to do that necessarily.
No.
Especially when the porcupine or the raccoon is twice your size. All right, you're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio. Next story.
Former President Donald Trump had a sit-down interview / town hall meeting last night on Fox News Channel. I have a bit of
audio. Sean Hannity?
Here. Yes. I have a bit of audio here. It's over a minute long, but it will give you a feel of some of what Trump had to say and how the audience responded to Trump's comments. Clip 6.
Actually, you know, they keep saying 60, but it starts in Delaware and North Carolina and other places a lot sooner than that. So I think we're going to be very well set up to do a great job. And do we love Pennsylvania? Do we love it? President, let me ask you this. This is a very tough interview.
One thing I'll say is that we did great in 2016. We did much better in 2020. We got millions of more votes. But there has never been enthusiasm like we have now. I mean, I see it all over. There's never been anything like it.
Yeah, that wasn't an interview. that was a rally with Fox News and Sean Hannity.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't care, but I mean, if Sean Hannity is going to conduct an interview, he's got to know if he's going to allow the crowd in. Right. That's what you're going to get. Go ahead.
If that sounded like a huge crowd, it was not in a studio. It was not in a school gymnasium. It was an arena.
Mm-hmm.
Very often when they call something a town hall, you think of a smaller environment.
Yeah, that was a pet rally.
Oh,
which
it
is
was.
Fine, but that wasn't.
Yes.
Trump said this as part of the speech last night. He was asked about. He said it's a sick and angry world for a lot of reasons, and we're going to make it better.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to heal our world. We're going to get rid of all these wars that are starting all over the place because of incompetence. Trump said Wednesday from the New Holland Arena in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania, of course, is a key state for the presidential election.
19 electoral votes.
Let's see, Trump won that in 2016, Biden in 2020, and it's a state, Pennsylvania is, which is has gone blue for the last three or four prior to Trump winning in 16, blue Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
So if the Republicans win there, it's kind of an upset.
Yes, very much so. Yeah, someone was saying if Republicans take Georgia and Pennsylvania, it's going to be almost impossible for Harris to win.
You mean if the Republicans do?
If the Republicans take
and vice versa.
Yep.
Now, the one thing you have to, you know, it has been said by numerous people numerous times on numerous channels. There's essentially two Georgias, Atlanta and the rest of the state.
Mm-hmm.
So pretty much everybody in the state of Georgia would need to show up to counteract whatever Atlanta does in this particular election. However, the Trump campaign has done a lot of events in Atlanta. Trump's gone to a barbershop. They have done events there in urban communities to try to show what Trump can do or what he has done for, let's say, black Americans and voters versus what Harris might do if she's in the Oval Office. It's going to be a nail-biter. I don't plan on going home election night.
Yeah. Anything to say to that, Ray?
Well, it is. I'm looking at a map right now of the states, and you can find these all over the internet. And it's going to come down to Nevada, Arizona, Georgia, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, Michigan and Wisconsin. But Chris, I think you're right. It might just come down to Pennsylvania. Whoever wins Pennsylvania is going to have a huge leg up.
Yeah.
It's going to be close.
As a survivor of the 2000 election, I just don't want to hear the word dimpled chads for weeks or days on end.
Yeah. Well, again, I mentioned yesterday, a lot of these swing states are just dead even. They're virtual ties. So the debate may actually be consequential.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I think it. I was just going to say it, Tim. It's interesting. I think this debate, because the two are so close,
right.
This debate, all it takes is a big mistake by one of those candidates,
right.
And that can make a difference.
When is the debate, Chris? Tuesday?
Tuesday night, and if the Lord tarries, we are going to be here to cover that late into the evening with my brother in Christ, Robert, covering that for us for the afternoon, evening news, I should say.
All right. Well, we're going to – so we'll be here Tuesday. We're not going to – go ahead.
Yeah, well, we'll be here Wednesday morning to talk about the results.
I'll have about 72 clips.
There's quite a bit of discussion about the conditions of the debate. There's been a lot of debate about the setup, the muted mics, and that sort of thing. Well, we learned this morning that, yes, there's going to be muted mics so that only when the – person answering a question, the microphone will be open. However, there are reports that ABC, who is sponsoring this ABC News, they have agreed to, if the exchange gets heated between the two candidates, there's a moderator who's in control of the microphones. They may open up both microphones, which is something we are told Vice President Harris would like, because she wants the opportunity to lecture the former president.
Yeah. Which geographical accent will she be using to lecture Trump? Mm-hmm. All right, we're going to be back in 5 minutes with more of today's issues, and we'll see you back here then.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.